Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Justin Fraze, 26 years of career experience, captain on Squad 18 with the Colony Fire Department in Texas, adjunct instructor for the North Central Texas College Fire Academy, cadre member with Citizens First, Build Your Culture, and Forge Fire Company, Georgia Smoke Diver, and assistant with Oklahoma Smoke Diver. From a young age, Justin knew he wanted to be in the service. Even though the fire service wasn't on his mind, he had a friend who put him in contact with the local junior college where he lived, took a few tests, and the rest was history. I hope the listeners can tune in on the reasons why Justin wanted to become a company officer and ask yourself, do you have that same notion? With that, I present Justin Fraze.
My name is Justin Fraze. I'm a captain with the Colony Fire Department, currently assigned to Squad 18. Been in the fire service 26 years, been a career fireman the entire time. I started in a small, really small department just in the suburbs of Dallas. I've kind of been a suburban firefighter my whole life and moved around a couple different times and ultimately found myself working in the Colony, Texas, I guess for about 11 years ago. Actually went there to go work for Chief Thompson. I've kind of known him my whole career and had an opportunity to get there. Got my have a degree or an associate's degree in fire science. Kind of teach different cadres, different conferences all over the place. Teach with Citizens First here and there. I do some with Forge Fire, one of the instructors at the Oklahoma Smoke Diver Program, and then also show up to Georgia Smoke Diver Program every November. And yeah, that's kind of a little bit about me. I got my start in the fire service. I knew very early on that I wanted to go into the service. So I enlisted in the Army when I was 17. So I showed up at home with a pretty high speed contract. And my dad really didn't know that I was going to bring this recruiter to his house, because at 17, you have to have somebody sign a consent form. And so we kind of had it out, and kind of the deal that we worked out was I was going to do the reserves and I would, enlist, do my thing, come back, and I would actually go active duty. My plan after that was actually to be a cop. I really had no ambition to be a fireman at all. And I was actually home on leave, and one of my best friends, his cousin was a fireman, and talked with him. It was just a happenstance deal. My friend's grandfather was in the hospital, so that's where I met his cousin. And he talks like he's got a baby in his hand all the time, and he's gonna drop this baby. When he talks to me, he's like, "Hey, home, so." Man, don't nobody like me, Kyle, man, but everybody likes fire, man. We got this cool schedule, and it kind of stuck with me. And when I got back home, I got in contact with him, and he put me in contact with somebody at the junior college kind of near my house, and made a couple phone calls and took some tests and put myself through fire school. Getting hired back then, I started in 99, so I finished fire academy at the end of 97. So back in the day. I feel like I'm old enough now. I can say back in the day. But fire jobs around the Metroplex in Dallas were super competitive, and you would show up for, I remember testing for Plano, Texas, and they had two openings and we had 600 guys show up for a test. And it was just super competitive to get in. And I really kind of got to the point where I really didn't think I was going to get hired. I was getting real close. You could only certify yourself, for 2 years at a time. Otherwise you had to go back and challenge the test or go back to fire academy again. And so I was actually talking to an Army recruiter about going back active duty. And I was still just a firefighter EMT. I didn't have my medic. And so the test I took, I think I had actually decided it was going to be the last test I take. And luckily they didn't have a written test, which was great, because I am what I am. But it was a PT test. And so for that PT test, we had to do push-ups, sit-ups, a mile-and-a-half run, bench press, like 80% of your body weight, leg press, 120% of your body weight. And after the sit-ups, it was just me and one other person. And after the push-ups, it was just me. So I was the only one that passed the test, and was probably the worst interview I ever had, because I knew that if they didn't hire me, it wasn't because anybody was better than me, because I was just truly terrible. So... but they took a chance on me, and you know, once I got my foot in the door, I've kind of just been trying to get after it as much as I can.
Okay.
But that's how kind of the start to how I got here.
So how does it feel like working for America has dubbed him America's Fire Chief, but seriously, like how does it feel knowing that you work at an organization where your fire chief allows everyone to be firefighters? He allows people to be the medics that they need to be. I just want to get a sense of that.
So, man, my everything just disconnected and reconnected. So
I don't know.
I missed part of the question. So like the whole thing just shut down and then just popped back up.
Okay. My question to you was, how does it feel like working for America's Fire Chief, where you know you work for an organization that lets firemen be firemen, medics be medics? The standard is the standard, because a lot of firefighters, or a majority of firefighters, don't really have that.
No, man, that was a lot of why I went to work there. And this was really before America's Fire Chief was America's Fire Chief. It was like when I kind of got there, 2014. So, that was already ramping up. But he's been that way the entire way. Like he, very fire first, very fire focused on what we do. And his reason for that, and I'm sure you've heard him explain it. Like if we're on a medic call and we get stuck, we have doctors that write all our protocols, and we can call those people. Those guys can bail us out. We can ask those guys questions. There's no 912. There's nobody else we can call to solve the problem, the fire problem. So we are the fire experts. So that's kind of how he, reconciles that, and I love that. The definitely feel supported on the fire side. I mean, I've gotten to do some of the best training that I've done in my career. Again, you heard me talk at Fire Day last year. I'm kind of on the second version of my career, but I am an infinitely better firefighter now since I've come to the colony than I was before I showed up. The people that we have got to bring in to train us, the classes that I've been able to go outside and do, have kind of put me in a position to where now I get to go out and help teach those classes and get to do cool stuff. But it feels very nice. There's really no hard no's, right? If it's fire related and he thinks we can sell the value of what it is that we want to do, then yeah, man, give it a shot. Let's see how it goes. So it's actually really cool from that aspect.
Now, before rising to the rank of captain, when you first got in there, were there any individuals that you kind of wanted to gravitate to emulate, to become the into the job firefighter, or has that always been a part of you?
Man, so it there was so there was a captain. He retired not long after I got there, but he was the captain that invited me to come over and ride the truck. So when I first, that's kind of how we defaulted even then, was the new guy, you've got assigned to an engine company, and you do your 6 months on the engine, then you do your couple months on the ambulance, and then they kind of clear you hot to you're kind of checked off at that point. And Captain Jeff Bell, he was the senior truck captain over there, and he had one of his guys that promoted. He had an opening, and he just happened to be working a swap that day. And I kind of tossed. He was like, "Yeah, man, like I'd love to have you come over. Like, just send an email and get me over. We'll get you over there on the truck." And I did, and that kind of, I had already kind of, done truck work in the past, and so that was really something that I wanted to be a part of when I got to the colony. And he's the one that made that happen. And the dude was phenomenal on calls, just like a guru on calls. When he stepped up, he was awesome. But yeah.
And so, how important would you say is it for the younger generation, the newer generation firefighters coming in, to try to find that mentor, even if that person may not know that they are a mentor to that person? But like, how important is it to have some sort of mentorship?
So the mentorship is really important. And if you're what we would call, a high value employee or somebody who's high speed, like you're mentoring somebody whether you know it or not. But we do the formal mentoring process, so new guys get assigned a mentor. And we do a pretty good job of that. It does get difficult with staffing sometimes. You want to have a mentor assigned who's a peer, and just that guy may have to swing out because somebody's, they need personnel at another firehouse. And so we're still trying to work out some kinks to try to keep those mentors with those mentees early on when they first get there. But this is the first department that I've worked at, where I can honestly say, like, even I hate the word minimum performer or minimum standard. Like the minimum standard, like Navy SEAL is still a freaking Navy SEAL, right? Like that's like the baseline is pretty high. The minimum standard guy in the colony across the board would still be a pretty high performer in a lot of other organizations. So everybody that comes there is surrounded by guys that are pretty good at the job. Everybody has something to offer.
Okay. And so at what point in your career did you decide to start moving up the ranks and why?
So I worked in another department. Again, I kind of talked about in my lecture, larger, another suburban department in this in this area. And for me, it was a fire. So we showed up to this fire. The crew that was assigned to that area, kind of made some missteps on the fire. It came in as, hey, there's two kids missing. They're trapped inside. So I was actually on an ambulance that day, and my role when I got there was to be the outside control guy. So when they got there, they're heavy volume of fire. Dad beating on a window, indicating where the kids were. Mom in the front yard. They had the go-to plan really probably should have been to VES that window and go right to where the kids were, and that's not what happened. Very long story short, lost both of these kids in this fire, and it deeply, deeply effed me up. Like it screwed me up bad. Like there's no two ways around it. This call changed the course of my career. My plan or my thought when that happened was, I'm going to put myself in a position where if something similar happens, like this scenario, it's not going to go the way that it went. That was my when I decided that I wanted to move up in the organization.
Okay. I mean, that's a hell of a reason. So with that being said, what are the ranks before you get to captain with the colony?
So the colony is just, firefighter, driver, then captain.
Okay.
So that's the rank structure there. And so this, I was asked to leave that organization. Again, I made mistakes. Again, got my career started over again, and then had to promote back up through the ranks again in the colony.
One question I always like to ask the guests when they have to transition to the departments, was it a hard pill to swallow, a hard move to know you have to start over again to work your way back up?
Well, when I talk about, the most influential days in my fire career, the first one was that fire. The second one was, leaving that department, being asked to leave that department. Definitely changed my outlook on the fire service and where, what I believed myself to be, and, how much I truly actually love being a fireman. I want to say wasted the first half of my career, but I very much took it for granted, man. I was very complacent, very comfortable. And I got, again, I've heard it many times. I've said it many times. There's only two kinds of people, those that are humble and those that are about to be. And I got my ass handed to me. I got humbled. So from that aspect, that point, yeah, it was super uncomfortable. But I literally left, meeting with the administration there. My first stop on my way home to tell my wife I didn't have a job was to pick up an application in the department right next to where I lived. It was in between where I had just come from and on my way home to tell my wife I didn't have a job. So starting over there, I was grateful, extremely grateful. It definitely changes your perspective on how lucky we are to get to do what we do. And it sucked. It was, one of the hardest things I've ever endured, but all of the best things that I've done in the fire service really happened after that. Again, that was, you get humbled like that, and you really have one or two choices. You either fold up or you rise up. And I had a wife and kids to support, and folding up wasn't an option.
Right.
But getting, started over again, I went, like, it was when I showed up at this next apartment, I was still a firefighter basic. So in Texas, we have different, you have your firefighter basic, intermediate, advanced, and master, based on, time and grade or time in the fire service. and then education classes that you take in A and B level courses and whatnot. And I was still a firefighter basic with 12 years in the fire service when I showed up to this department. And I, again, it's one of those, hey, I looked in the mirror, hey, held myself accountable for what happened, and then just put my head down and every class I could get a hold of, enrolled in college. I think I went from a firefighter basic to my master firefighter in like right out of a year. Just upgrading certifications and just pouring myself into to getting better in the fire service. So from that aspect, that was super uncomfortable. I left that department to go to the colony, and man, like I didn't like it. It sucked. Like is you're getting you're always change is always hard. Especially for us, like we're very much set in our ways. Like the two things we hate are the way things are now and change. So, but it was the best move that I could have possibly made in my career.
You mentioned the word complacency, and the thing with complacency is sometimes you don't even realize that you're in it. That's it's very subtle, and then you just things that you would normally check, you start to not check. But the question I always have, and when I talk with my other friends about it, is like, does the person even know that they're in the realm of complacency at that time?
No, you don't know. And I had a sign made, and it's in the hallway in between, when you walk out to the bay floor, and it said, "Complacency will kill you till you die from it." Because it's a slow death, and you don't even realize that it's happening to you. So it's you have to daily not take shortcuts. That's the biggest thing, just not taking shortcuts. That workout that I don't want to do, I need to do that workout. That complete air pack check that I know that I need to do, I'm going to do that. I'm not going to half-ass this thing. And dude, there's days that I've walked in and I've looked at that air pack and I took like a half step away and I'm like, no, dude, fucking get that thing off, get it on your back, check it off the right way. What the right thing, and you have to, you battle with that. 'Cause there's, I mean, I would love to say that I have come in every day of my fire service career dialed in and turned up to 100, man, but that's just not reality. But there are things that you have to hold yourself accountable to and hold that standard to avoid complacency.
That's a fact. And for you, at least, that you can say for yourself, you've had that call where things have gone south. And I think, maybe in my opinion, the majority of people who are in the complacency realm don't have that. So
Oh yeah,
that's
yeah.
why it
They're
continues.
oh yeah. They're in the hey. That happens here. That doesn't happen to me. That's not going to happen to us. That's super rare. What are the odds that that's ever going to happen? Like it doesn't happen to you till it does. And when it does, yeah, you're gonna get your ass handed to you because you were complacent.
Definitely, for sure. Okay. With that being said, I want to ask you, in your opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you? It's a very big buzzword in the fire service right now.
Man, aggressive is a mindset. And it's not just aggressive on the fire ground. It's controlled aggression. It's moving toward a solution with determination and purpose. Like I'm controlled. I know what my end goal is. I've already formulated a plan because I've trained to handle this. I know what's going to happen, and so it's going to happen probably violently, but with purpose and not reckless. I'm not just, you're not that tough man fighter guy who's just flailing arms and swinging. No, I'm coming at you with a very specific purpose in mind. And I'm going to impose my will on this situation and end what I need to. We're going to handle what we need to handle when we get there. It's not being a cowboy and it's not doing all this wild shit. No, I'm very confident in my ability to do what it is that I'm going to do because I've trained on it or I've been in this situation multiple times that I feel extremely comfortable being aggressive in this situation.
Okay. With you being a captain, I want to ask you a couple of captain questions, company officer questions. My first is, what is your non-negotiable for the people that you serve?
Non-negotiable. So man, I wish I'd had them printed out, but I have my oh man, what do you call it? My vocabulary has escaped me because I've been awake for a really long time now.
Your rules?
Yeah, not rules. So like I have a vision,
Okay.
You know, this is my, hey, this is my vision for what the squad is, or what the squad name was in my firehouse. These are the standards that we're going to hold ourselves up to. So in uniform, ready to take calls prior to shift change, because we got guys that want to go home to their families, just like you want to go home when you get off. Air packs checked off, bottles full every morning, non-negotiable. Eating meals as a shift, non-negotiable. We're going to do in that 48-hour period, we're going to do at least one workout together as a crew, non-negotiable. Those are really kind of the big ones. Like, we are going to be prepared for the day. You know, the rig checkoffs and all that take precedent over mowing the grass and eating breakfast. That's going to happen. You know, first thing, we're going to make sure that we're ready to run calls and solve problems as soon as humanly possible. So we're gonna do a pass on with the crew that's leaving, and then, you know, 0700 trucks are getting pulled out, chainsaws are running, and we're making sure that we're good to go for the crew for the tour.
Fantastic. Okay.
Family
So,
time is family time also. Like, when we're having family time, we're all doing family time. And our firehouse is big enough that you can hide.
Okay.
And fortunately for me, again, I kind of, with the, being the squad, we're I kind of get to pick the guys, you know, to some extent, who work for me. And so we're all very, you know, like-minded. And so we spend away, you know, other than when we go to sleep, we are together all the time.
Okay. And so, if I can ask, what was your reason to become a company officer?
You have your vision of what you want the fire service to be. Right. So
Right.
the fire service that you want to be a part of, and you can create change from the bottom. Like, you can. It's difficult, though. It's really hard to push that stuff from the bottom up. It's a lot easier when you put yourself in a position that, you know, a formal influence. So, hey, I'm going to make this into, you know, the fire service that I want to be a part of. So I'm going to have, my guys are going to be, you know, we're going to be disciplined. We were going to now. Don't get me wrong. Like, the shit talking in my firehouse is, it's exquisite. It's masterful. Sarcasm is my first language. English is my second. But when we show up and go to work, dude, these guys just get after it. But I had this, you know, my, what I wanted to see in the fire service, guys, we genuinely take care of each other. That's probably the biggest thing in my firehouse that I really push, is like, if I'm only looking out for myself, I've got one dude looking out for me. If I'm looking out for everybody, and the guy to my left and my right are both looking out for me, now I've got six guys that are keeping me in line and holding me accountable all the time. One of the things I started doing, and it sounds so stupid, like it's comical when I explain this to people, and they're like, "What do you do?" I just open the door to the rig for the guy who's riding behind me, and it sounds like a little bitty tiny thing. And what it turns into is this race back to the cab, you know, because they're going to try to open my door first, and like, they're slamming doors and opening doors, but we kind of go out of our way to serve each other. Like, guys will, in my firehouse, will sneak around to clean stuff to keep other guys from cleaning stuff. It's we created kind of this little micro culture of, you know, servant leadership and service before self. And that's, you know, again, a big hallmark of the Smoke Diver, or, you know, program. And that's something that I wanted to build inside my firehouse.
Okay. Love it. I love that. And lastly, when it comes to company officers, we're not really company officers, but in general, but company officers are the leaders. So what does leadership look like to you? What kind of leader did you want to become when you told yourself, hey, I want to be a company officer?
Man, like, being in the fire service as long as I have, and I've worked for a total of five different organizations, and so I've seen the good and the bad and the ugly of leadership in the fire service, man. And so you learn as much from the bad ones as you do from the good ones. That's a real thing. And I kind of just put together like the best traits of all these guys that I work for, and try to, you know, build myself into the leader that I would want to work for. I wanted a dude who, you know, I want to work for a guy who's intelligent, like, who actually knows the job and has an idea of what he's doing. I wanted to, work for the, I loved working for the guys that led by example. Like this guy, he didn't just talk about, what he does. He actually shows me what he does. Like this guy can explain this to me. Like, he could teach me how to do this like I was a fifth grader. Like he can explain it that well. I wanted to be that guy. I wanted to be the guy that challenged and pushed. I had company officers that challenged me and pushed me to get better. I wanted to be that guy that also wanted to be the dude that, was empathetic and understood, like, hey, guys, go through shit. Just, the whole, hey, I'm going to leave home at home. I'm going to leave the fire station at the fire station. That's not a real effing thing, dude.
Right.
And it bleeds over. And, the guy that understood, like, when guys are going through shit, hey, there's a time to lean into this dude to push him. And there's a time to, like, give this guy some slack right now because he has some shit happening. I wanted to be that guy as well. And so, those were the things that I valued or that I thought were really important and that I've tried to do or tried to be for my guys.
You mentioned one main point for me is the fact that like everybody goes through something, right? And you being a company officer, if you don't see that or don't get the clue, now granted, there are some people that are very good at hiding things, but you know if somebody on your crew's acting off.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And that's, it's funny that I had a conversation about that this morning, man, but developing relationships with your guy, man, that's not some random dude that I don't view the guys that I work with. They're not just my coworkers, man. I love those guys and I'm going to go to war with them and I'm going to go to war for them. And, if you don't develop a relationship with these guys, you're not spending your downtime in the firehouse. Maybe some off time together, getting to know them, knowing their families. You're gonna miss stuff, right? I stole this from Jacob Johnson and love Jacob. Here's this, love your brother. But he would send a letter, like when he would get a new guy assigned to his crew, he'd send a letter to his family. So my handwriting, I look like I write with my feet. So I just send a text message, but I get if they're married, their wife's name or husband's name or, parent, whoever it is that, significant to them. And I just send them a message. Hey, this is Captain Phrase. I'm so-and-so's company officer. I just want to let you know, A, how glad I am to have this guy to be a part of my crew. I can't wait to work with him. The second part of this is I want you to have my phone number. So if there's ever an emergency, you can't get a hold of him or her at the firehouse. Don't hesitate to call me. If there's something that happens off duty that you need my help with, reach out to me and I will do everything I can to help you out with that. I want them to know, like, I don't just give a shit about you here. I give a shit about you at home. We had and I did this right when I first promoted, and I kind of inherited like a senior guy, and he's a few years older than me. I'm 48, so he's into his 50s. But I sent this text message to his wife, and she messaged me back that no one had ever reached out to her or talked to her about them caring about their husband about her husband, like. Nobody had ever talked about what he did in the firehouse or made him or her feel like he was valued, as a coworker. I mean, it kind of crushed me that like this dude's got 20 something years in the fire service and he's never heard that. His wife has never heard that, man.
Right.
That was really kind of shitty. So I make it a point to do that for everybody that comes to work for me.
No, Chief Johnson is an awesome individual, but you
Just
know,
a good human, man.
yeah. But the fact that you kind of do something similar definitely goes a long way. It shows that yes, they're not just a number, they're not just a name on my shift, they're a part of the family.
Yeah, and like I straight up stole that from him when he told me about that. I'm like, dude, that's brilliant. I'm definitely doing that. That's awesome.
Fantastic. Okay. while we're on that kind of topic, the term brotherhood gets thrown around a lot. So my question to you is wellness and truly being there. You've kind of explained what you do with your crew, but the fire service as a whole, man, and you know this, I'm sure you experienced it. we can be straight up savages to each other, but like
Oh yeah.
we could be savages, but then on the other side, if somebody needs help or God forbid somebody dies, we show up in numbers, but it's like we can't, I don't understand how the savage part still exists.
Man, it's I don't understand it either. And again, I am a 4-star general shit talker. Like I grew up with some dudes. Like we now again, it wasn't malicious. Like we just talk trash to each other, and it's
Right.
it's fun. But the guys that genuinely tear guys down, like that's there's different levels of it. There's some of sometimes it's jealousy. Sometimes it's a dude who's just being a shit bag, and guys are going to talk shit about him. But then, and what I've especially in the company officer role, what I've learned is, hey, the guys have stuff going on in the background, and you don't know what's going on, what everybody's going through. It definitely moving into the company officer role definitely changed my perspective on that, and just learning what you learn about people. It's about, man, I forget the book. What You Accept Is What You Teach. It's one of the books that's on our on was on our promotional exam, and it talks about that, like that the attitude is the last place that you should be looking for performance issues, right? There's system problems, but it gets a long way around. It gets to, hey, guys have stuff, people have stuff happening at home, and so instead of like jumping this guy's ass because he did this thing wrong, or he just twisted off on somebody, like, hey dude, like you just fucked up, right? You don't get to talk to that dude that way. So tell me what's going on. Why is this happening? Before we just but you still have guys that like they see a performance deficiency in a guy, and they start talking crap about him. It's one thing to talk to him to his face. It's another thing to talk about their back, behind their back, and that's what bothers me. I have a very strict policy. Like I will not say anything behind your back that I won't say to your face, but I will say some straight up messed up stuff to your face. But I would rather somebody be honest with me to my face than, talk crap behind my back. And not, if I'm screwing up, let me know that I'm screwing up. If it's an actual performance issue, if it's an actual problem, let me know. Don't just go over here and start talking shit behind my back and not tell me, where it is that you believe that I'm failing, or what it was that you perceive that I did wrong.
But on the flip side, if you do have somebody, which I hope a lot of people do, have somebody that's gonna, maybe not call you out in front of everybody, but one-on-one go, hey man,
Oh,
like
yeah.
your performance is pretty
Yes.
terrible. You shouldn't take that to heart either. You should realize they're right. But in my
Yeah.
experience, we have guys that are like, oh, you're just a dick, or you just think you know
Yeah.
it all.
Yeah. I've talked that. Like, I was that passionate asshole for a long time. I was, if you weren't as into it as me, like, I was a dick. I would just straight up write you off. And I'm like, again, you take some maturing to get past that. I think everybody who's into this job at some point in time, they go through that phase when they realize that, oh, I'm going all in, and if you're not doing this like I am, then you're wrong. But it just takes some maturing to be able to grab a dude, hey man, come here, what the hell is going on right now, dude? Like, tell me why you're acting this way, tell me what happened. And you're going to get a lot farther if we could push the fire service so much farther if we hold guys accountable, but also have some empathy. Like, hey, do you know that that sucked? All right, cool. So tell me why that sucked. Man, this, and this. I'm like, so is it something I need to teach you, or you have something else going on, or like, do you just not know? And then move from there. But just the running dudes down behind their back, yeah, not a fan. That's a problem.
Yeah, for
And
sure.
I don't know why I don't know why we still do it. I think maybe guys, like, they bond over shit talking about other people. If they're, maybe it's just something to talk about, because we have the greatest gossip circle in the planet. If we're like, we are a bunch of old women, man. We're old women and high school girls is what we're kind of turning into sometimes. But I also think, the busier that you are, I think that's probably going to happen a lot less. If you're burning the world down and catching a bunch of fires, you probably have a lot less of that drama. Unfortunately for us, we're not burning the Colony, Texas down, right? So we still have some of that happening, and it's this kind of constant pursuit of trying to run that stuff down and kind of end it where we can.
But one thing I know that your organization does that I think is very beneficial that other departments may not do is company officer development and how developing your officers, not just for the fire ground, because it seems like we do a pretty good job. I would say most organizations do a pretty good job. Hey, all right, I want to go for captain. All right, cool. You need to have this step, this step, this step. We need to see your size up. We need to do presentations, whatever. But when it comes to developing that person, where if I come to you as, hey, Cap, like I'm struggling with a substance abuse problem, you know, it's like, oh shit, they didn't teach me that. They just said, I meet my checkbox. Here's my badge. I'm a captain now. See ya.
Yeah. And like we're still lacking in that. So we do our captain's camp once a year, and we kind of hit on like some city policies, and HR comes in and helps us out with like our first report of injury forms and things like that, administratively how we go about stuff. But again, like we're still a philosophy driven department as much as it can be. I think we're slowly moving towards more policies than just philosophy. But the like we could always stand to have more company officer development. The man the I've had some stuff happen in the firehouse that nobody can prepare you for. Like I don't even know how you start to prepare for some of that stuff. And the best you can do is, hey, I can here's what I can do, and I need to call somebody to help me out with the rest of this stuff. I think that's, and then this is like a lot of company officers, especially guys that are still kind of younger in the fire service, is feeling like they have to have all the answers. Like we don't, you don't have to have all the answers, man. And sometimes the right answer is, dude, I don't know, but we're gonna figure it out together. And you got to be humble enough to go, yeah, dude, I don't have an answer for you. And then sometimes you just, throw some stuff against the wall and hope it sticks. Like try to do the best that you can for your guys. And I honestly believe like if the heart is there, if you're always trying to do the right thing, you'll never be wrong. That doesn't mean that you're not going to get your ass handed to you and wrote up or something like that. But if I'm doing the right things for the right person for the right reasons at the right time, I generally feel supported by our organization.
No, for sure. Okay. And with that, with the organization that you're with, you still do one thing that I love, and that's you are fortunate where you travel outside, you know, Texas. You go all over to teach things. So my question to you is, how important is outside training, getting outside of your comfort zone, your four walls of your organization?
Oh, it's super important, man. For a long time, Texas was like we were kind of on an island. Like you go back to like pre-9/11, and if it didn't come from TEKS, or if it wasn't a TCFP, Texas Commission on Fire Protection course, like nobody cared about it. And nobody cared about what they were doing in New York or Boston or any of these other big departments because I thought this. By God, this is Texas. We don't do any of that crap. How's that important here? It was really, that's probably one of the, if there was a good thing that came post 9/11 was that, we started moving to bringing people from the outside in to training in the Metroplex and then, around this area. Somebody always has a better way. There's always something to learn. We're not doing it. But we're not the best in the world at any single thing we do, but we've brought in a bunch of guys that are pretty good at a lot of this stuff, and being able to admit, hey man, we had we got our first high rise in the colony. We had no base of knowledge for high rise stuff, so we brought in Dave McGrail, and brought in a high rise guru. So being able to go, hey man, like this is something that we have access to some guys, in the fire service that are really good at this stuff and are putting out some programs. And like we can humble ourselves enough to go, hey, this guy has some good information, bring this dude in. And yeah, we've learned a ton, changed the way that we operated based on training that we received from outside of our department. The secondary part to that is you hear people talking about the fire service is dead, or the brotherhood in the fire service is dead. Man, it's not dead. It just may have moved out of your house. And sometimes you got to go to some outside training and get around some people that are like-minded and find these people, find your tribe because it may not be in your firehouse. So getting to out to some of these conferences and meeting some of these people and not just showing up, but actually like engaging. we've sent guys to Pensacola and stuff like that, and they're like, oh, I don't want to go, and they're making me go or whatever. The guys put in, hey, do you want to go? Yeah, you want to go. And they may have just gone to go see the beach in Florida, but they've all, to the man, have all brought something back, some good information from going to those conferences. And then you have the guys that are super high speed, and they're paying out of their own pockets to go to conferences, and they're always bringing stuff back. So yeah, it's a huge thing to get outside of your bubble and make yourself uncomfortable, find some people that are like-minded and get better at the job.
And definitely now in 2025, Texas has blown up with the amount of conferences, the amount of cadres. Like it's like every other month or every other quarter, there's something going on in Texas where individuals can go to, and that's awesome.
And that's happening across the country. I mean, like I said, back in the day, it was for Texas, it was Teaks, and it was, just TCFP courses. And then we started sending guys started getting out to FDIC, and all these smaller conferences started popping up, and it's been really cool, man. The information sharing and the stuff that's going around, I got my start in teaching outside, after going through Georgia and just interacting with guys on social media, and got invited to come teach at a conference in Ohio. And that's where I met Shane Bentley and Sean Duffy and Arthur Ashley and Chris Kessinger, and got plugged in with all these guys. And it was really cool. It was the Citizens First Fire Training, the very first one. And these guys that I had, I kind of interacted with in social media a little bit, but had never really met in real life. And we're sitting up there talking about how we're going to start putting these search drills together, and how we're going to, what we're teaching, drags, carries, and how we prioritize more research. And we're all talking about the exact same thing and doing it almost exactly the same way. I'm like, dude, did we just become best friends? Yep. You want to do karate in the garage? Yes, let's go. And so it was really cool to get outside and see that. And to me, that just kind of solidified what I already knew. Like, there's people out here that are actually into this, and they're good at it. And we don't have the market cornered on, the fire service in the Colony, Texas. There's stuff a lot more to be offered. There's a lot more information out there that we don't have yet.
Right. Okay.
And
Well,
it's always evolving.
that this is true. The fire service is always evolving. So, the adage you talk about, firefighters don't like change and the way things are. Like, at some point, we have to adapt to whatever the case may be, whether it's hose, search techniques. Like, somebody's always out there trying to improve or do things a little bit easier for the fire service. And we have to be adaptable that. Just because you've done it this way for a long time doesn't mean that's the only way.
Like, relevance is important, man. Especially at the company officer level, with the younger generation. God, I feel so old when I say the younger generation, but I'm getting old, man. But the information that they have access to, isn't what I had access to in, the early 2000s. And, I have to stay relevant to the information that they're coming back with when they go to these conferences, and the stuff. Hey, Cap, tell me what you think about this. I'm like, yeah, dude, that's a great idea. I saw this, at this conference from this guy, and this is how they were kind of looking at it. And, you definitely have to, especially in any kind of leadership position, whether formal or informal, have to stay relevant with what's going on in the fire service and how we're operating.
Definitely. Okay. You mentioned a phrase that cued my next question. So it's a fact. It happens. It's gonna happen. We all get old, right? So when it comes to fitness, I would like to know, first off, why did the smoke diver program intrigue you and intrigue you enough where you went ahead and applied?
Man, so I had actually heard about the program early on in my career. So when I first was looking at joining the military, like, actually the contract that I brought to my dad was a Ranger contract. That's all I ever wanted to be. And like, my dad and I had a literal, like, get after it with this recruiter here. I was, again, at 17 years old, you have to have your parents' consent. If I'd have waited 9 months, I could have done whatever I wanted. But you're 17, and if I'm impatient now, you could imagine how impatient 17-year-old Justin is. It was bad. But I had heard about the program. Texas had a program for a short time, and
Right.
it was similar, but not the same thing. And it shut down. And for me, I always wanted to challenge myself to do something at an elite level. Like, and I'm not like a super fitness guru, man. I mean, you've seen me. I look how I look. I am what I am. So one of Phil Chauvin, I think his smoke diver number is 86. His nickname is the Wizard. So he actually moved to a town real close to where we live, and he actually came and talked to Teep Thompson about the program. And they were out there training in our little training yard. And who the toughest guys you got here? It was two other guys. My name wasn't even mentioned. But they agreed to let those guys go to the program, and I begged my way in. Hey, man, I would really like an opportunity to go do this. And just I've always kind of been more of like a functional athlete. Like, I'm not going to be a model on a beach at all. This thing is just built to work. That's really all I'm good at. And but just trained up and went out there and got after it.
How many attempts did it take for you to get it?
So I got injured on my first attempt, and I came back and got it on the second. But I got injured on Tuesday, and then I went out on the obstacle course on Thursday. And when they opened up, I still tell people, like, I don't know which day was harder, like the day that I got resigned or the day that I went home on Thursday at Smoke Diver, like, because both of them were pretty awful. But when they opened up the application period, I'm pretty sure I was the very first person to apply to come back for that next class. But yeah, I absolutely loved every bit of it.
Now, I understand that gear workouts and smoke diver programs, they may not be everyone's cup of tea, but people cannot refute the fact that fitness and firefighting have to go hand in hand.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, no, Doc. That you, again, you don't have to be, a triathlete or ultra marathon runner or a bodybuilder. You have to be functionally fit, and it's being able, like, everything that we do is predicated on our ability to function inside of our gear. Like, if you can't function with the bunker gear on, an air pack on your back, a helmet on your head, boots on your feet, like, what good is it? So, like, my fitness has always, just wrapped around. So I'll back up. I wasn't always any kind of fit. I think at one point in time I got up to like 300 pounds when I promoted to driver in the other organization. I remember, I was on the list to promote, and we ran a fire alarm, like a 4-story nursing home. And I made like 3 or 4 trips up the stairs, and I was sucking. I'm like, holy crap. Like, how is anybody going to follow you as any kind of leader if you are a fat sack of crap brace? Like, my self-talk's pretty brutal. And so I just, got in gear, and just started training. What year is that? 2006, 2007-ish. I didn't know anything about CrossFit or any of that crap, but I knew that, hey, if I put on my gear, I put on all this crap, and I do all this work, then certainly I'm going to get in some kind of better shape. And so that's what I did. And then, obviously training up to go to the Smoke Diver. And then man, I wish I could remember. I literally saw like a little clip yesterday. It was, so she's a female who went through the Ranger program in the Army, and she said that there are two kinds of people there. They're patch wearers and patch bearers. And I love the way she explained it. You have guys that'll just go through the program. Hey, I got this patch. Like, I'm good. And then you have the guys who go through the program and they get that patch. And that was, the way she explained it, that was the easy day. Now it's going to be a career of maintaining that standard. Like, so are you a patch? You're a patch wearer, or you're a patch bearer. Like, when I wear this thing, when it's on my bunker coat, or I put on that shirt and I go to a training, or I, show up to Oklahoma or Georgia, I'm an ambassador for that program, and I'm going to maintain, the highest standards that I'm capable of maintaining. Now, again, a couple of busted shoulders and a busted knee. I've had two back surgeries already. But I'm still going to get out there and get after it. Like, what keeps me up at night fitness wise is I never want to be a liability. Like, the day that I'm a liability, the day that I never want to be the reason a rescue doesn't get made. I never want to be the reason that a dude doesn't go home. That's my, when I feel like I want to be complacent or I want to take that day off, that's what I repeat in my head and go out there
and get done what I need to get done.
Freaking love it. Love it. Love it. Okay.
That and I take a lot of pride being almost as old as I am and crushing a bunch of 20-year-olds. Like that's just a lot of fun being the old dude who's just going to go out there and snatch these kids' souls when we go work out at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on the back apron at the firehouse and it's 103 outside.
Love it. No, I do love it. And it's very important. I sometimes I just don't understand how individuals don't realize it. And like I said, everyone has different fitness level, but when you just like give up altogether and you're like, oh, I'll be fine, when that call comes in, like you're lying to yourself, you're lying to your crew, but it's the fact that you don't realize. And I think a lot of it is firefighters don't realize the true responsibility we have when like shit hits the fan.
Yeah, and man, it's not even just the fitness stuff. Like I was in Michigan for the Great Lakes Hot last month, and when we were talking about, we're just talking about masking up, and the where I usually get guys in the fields is like, all right, cool, man. So here's the scenario: it's the person that you love is on the other side of this window, and you're watching the guy who's going to go to your fire mask up in the front yard. Who do you want coming? Do you want the dude that takes 2 minutes to get his crap on and get through the window, to make this rescue? Or do you want the dude who can mask up in 10 seconds? Who do you want that to be? And then you have to make this personal. Like, who do I want coming to, John Sparrows? Who do you, would you want you rescuing you? That's when you explain it to people that way, and like you see that they've never thought of that. Like there's like a this look of desperation on their face when you call that out for the first time, and they actually legitimately think about that. And like I applied that to all aspects of the fire service. Personalize all of it. Do you want the guy that does not know how to force the door? Do you want the guy that doesn't know how to do a harness conversion coming to get you out? The guy who doesn't know how to manipulate that rip pack and knows the inside and outs of that rip bottle and how to get you air when you're down, like personalize that shit. And then, assess yourself, assess the dudes that you work with, get them to buy in, make a plan, and start getting stuff better.
Facts, facts. Okay. Actually, before I go to that next, because the next question I had is what's more of a lighter topic, but before I get there, I want to ask you one last question, and I always like to ask the guests, where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it up?
Man, at the definitely, I'd like to be a battalion chief. I'd like to see what I could do in that role. And then, a training chief position I think would be pretty rad. I think you have a lot of influence in a fire department. From there, so you get to see what the training looks like and kind of have oversight into how you go about, hey, here's where I want this department to be, and you get to map out how you get there. I think you'd want one of those two positions. I think that's about as far as I really want to go. And I love being a company officer, man. I thought that being a driver was the sweetest spot in the firehouse, and it still is. Driving's a sweet gig, man. Oh, what am I gonna do? I'm just gonna do this, I'm just gonna do cool shit and wave at kids and honk the horn and stuff. But I love being a company officer. I like the problem solving aspect. I like the people aspect of it. Taking care of not just the citizens but the dudes in my firehouse. It gets to be it can get heavy sometimes. But like I'm glad that like it's an honor to be the guy to bear that weight. That makes sense.
Yes.
That to like when you have that relationship with your guys that hey, if it's shitty, you're the one that they're gonna call. There's a lot of I don't take that responsibility lightly, and I'm very honored to be in that position. That and the getting to watch my guys develop and trying to give away. Like I told Chief Thompson, like when I first promoted, like I wish that I could USB download like hey, here's everything that I know about the fire service, and then just plug it into somebody, but you can't beat them down training for 10 hours a day to get them to know everything that you know. You got to get them to buy into what you're doing, and give them just enough to keep them hungry to want to learn something else, and watch them develop. And that's the cool part of it, man. The running calls and all the other, and the shit talking at the firehouse is super fun, but the most meaningful part is the relationships, the not just the professional development, but the character development in your guys, and seeing how they can change the organization.
And that right there is what I wish more individuals who want to aspire to get to the rank of captain, I wish they would think like that, because we all know the ones that I want it for rank, I want it for more money, which I get it. The economy today, everything's expensive, I get it.
Oh, yeah.
But if your sole reason is for title and pay, but not everything else that you just said, then to me,
Yeah.
there's no point. Why be that company officer?
Yeah. Like, what did one of my really good friends, I'll give Yusuf a shout out, one of the best company officers that I know. He was already in the colony before I got there. He's been there, hell, he's been there 20 years now, but been a captain for 6 or 8 years. But that dude, like, watching him, like, the guy's just phenomenal on the fire ground, great in the firehouse. Him and I rode the truck together. One of the best crews I've ever worked on. Yusuf, Tyler Hawkins, Stephen Grail, Greg Campbell was our captain. Just had a badass crew. All those guys have since promoted, but just guys that go above and beyond to make sure they're taking care of their dudes and trying to pass on what they know, like have a good time in the firehouse, but also just killers on the fire ground, dude. Like all of them. So.
Definitely. Love it. Love it. My last question, we kind of talked about it earlier before we recorded, and you're like, send it. So I always like to ask, but for me too, you have a different perspective because you've worked for several different organizations. So the schedule debate. You've worked how many different schedules have you worked?
I've only worked two schedules. I've only worked 24 48s and then 40 and 96.
Okay.
So
So
that's
same for me.
so I'm pretty yeah I mean, I'm pretty institutionalized, or was, into the 24 48. Yeah.
That seems to be another, which I get it. Like a lot of, I think different people and organizations are trying to push for like 40-hour work weeks and a fourth platoon, which would be awesome. But for some organizations, it's just not realistic. It just can't happen. Maybe not at the current time. Maybe if they pre-plan for the future. But whatever the case may be, it was funny you mentioned that, well, I told you something that you kind of like were like, man, this is the same thing. And
Yeah.
it sucks that I wasn't a fan of the 4896s. I like it definitely way more than the 2448, but I use the word, or no, you use the word, no, I use the word, and you were like, man, that hits. We endure the 48 to get to our 96s. And I like
Yeah.
how you said firefighters shouldn't have to do that, but we do.
Yeah, like wait, yeah, the I loved coming in for 24 hours at a time. Again, I guess it's probably a lot of institutionalization. That's just what I was. I did that for 20 years, man.
Right.
So, but I could, my body, I could go in for 24 hours at a time, dude. I could run calls from 7 a.m. to 7 a.m. the next day, leave that firehouse, go do whatever it was I need to do that day. I could go to sleep that night, and good to go. I can't hammer down like that for 48 hours, man. I just can't do it. And the even the again, the schedule is what the schedule is, man. The 4 days off, I love the 4 days off. And you take a vacation tour in there, and you're off for 10 days. Like there are a lot of benefits to it. And honestly, if I had to vote again, I'd probably vote for the 4896, for the time off. But I hate that we're enduring the 48, man. Even the guys that love it at like noon or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they're just over it. And man, I don't feel like I'm as good a firefighter at 2 o'clock in the morning on day two as I am at 2 o'clock in the morning on day one. And I feel like I'm doing the fire service a disservice. Now the 2472, that would be rad. Like I'm all for that, but again, it's not feasible for a lot of the country as far as, getting for us to make enough money to make a livable wage
Right.
and do 24/72, and it's not something our department is, looking towards anytime soon. It's, the schedule debate, like, nobody's going to win. Everybody has an opinion. That's
Yes.
just mine. Like I said, I'm not shit talking the 48-96. Like,
Right.
again, the 96 is awesome. It's the 48 that I got to do. And I guess that's that problem. Like, I've got ADD, like, super bad, and I don't moderate well. Like, I am hammered down, or that's my moderation, is hammer down or nothing. And so I struggle with the moderation, and but that's part of my company expectations. That's what I was looking for, when I talked about, like, my vision, like these are my, my expectations, and I'm my expectations are 3 pages. There's a mission. Hey, this is my mission statement. A couple motivational quotes, and then, hey, this is what you can expect from me. This is what I expect from you in return. But I address sleep in that. Like, hey, we're here for 48 hours at a time, and, like, the biggest component of the mental health crisis in the fire service is sleep deprivation, man. So I'm really good about when I send out my morning report, day one, day two, hey, this is what time, so we're going to do these things. And if it's in between those times, like, hey, so we got something going on at 9, we got something going on at 11, we finish that thing at 9 o'clock, at 9:45, you got an hour and 15 minutes to take a nap, make phone calls, do whatever you do. Right. And I'm going to try to build time in there for us to, try to rest when we can, because we don't know what our schedule is going to be at night. We might run 0 calls. We might run 10. We don't know.
That's right.
But trying to get guys, some quality rest. We're at the firehouse, so when, they do get done with that 48-hour tour, they're, going to be, worth a damn for their families when they get off.
Yeah, for sure. No, I love it. And I agree with you. This was not a debate. I just genuinely we hit on that topic, and I just wanted to hear your viewpoints on it, because I feel like there are some firefighters that love it, but there are some that are having to endure it. And I use that word endure because that's what the fire service is. Like, we have evolved. We have gone from fire and medical calls to now public service calls. Shut off my water. Hell, I had a call where a lady called us and she wanted us to program her thermostat digitally. And I'm like, okay. But, like, it's the fire service. We endure, we adapt, we endure, we continue. We really never say no. And so, yeah, I just wanted to ask.
Like the thermostat thing, man. I still love that people call us for that. Like, at the end of the day, that's the coolest part about the fire service. And Chief Thompson talks about that. He expects us to be problem solvers. Like, we're just going to show up and solve their problem. Oh, you can't figure out how to shut your water off to this faucet. Hey, man, we got you. Can't program a digital thermostat. I've got a dude who's like an AI super nerd who can figure that stuff out. He could probably do it from his phone and send his Tesla car over there to program it for her. The fact that people still call us for that, does it wear on you sometimes? Absolutely. But who they couldn't think of anybody else to call, so they called us. Like, hey, at the end of the day, I know that these guys could probably figure some crap out. And I hope we never lose that. I know it gets frustrating doing the bullshit calls, a parrot. Oh, my parrot is stuck in the tree. I'm like, get the bird, man. But I mean, we're gonna figure out a way to get this parrot out of a tree. Oh, your cat is legitimately in this tree. All right, I guess I'm gonna send a guy up on a ladder. We'll see how it goes for everybody. The cat just barrels out of the tree and lands on the ground. I'm like, well, I mean, cat's out of the tree, you're welcome. But I hope that we never lose that, like that the public trusts us enough and believes in us enough that when they can't solve their problem, like, that they think about us.
For sure. For sure. Justin, I appreciate you coming on, man. I really do. Never change. I've heard your lecture in full detail at Carolina Fire Days. It was fantastic. Others definitely need to hear your story. Being humble, maturing. Hopefully, as firefighters, when we come into this field, if we're young, hopefully at some point we evolve into that where we are mature. We don't snap at each other. We listen to each other's conversations. We digest it. We don't go, well, if you're not on my team, I don't need you anymore. We're not friends. So I just want to say,
No.
continue being you. Thank you very much, and I really appreciate you.
No, man, thank you so much for having on. You have some phenomenal guests on here. I listen to it all the time, man. So it's an honor to get a chance to talk with you, man. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.